Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. In a recent study, investigators focused on net spending on specialty medicine after manufacturer rebates. What they found was a sharp rise in net specialty drug spending, but they also noted that the use of rebates was rapidly increasing too. This was true for both public and private payers. We discussed these findings with lead study author Dr. Stephen C. Hill, a senior economist with the Division of Research and Modeling, Center for Financing, Access, and Cost Trends at the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality in Rockville, Maryland. So, Dr. Hill, can you explain what rebates are exactly and why you decided it was necessary to understand specialty drug price trends net of rebates?
So let me start with the basics. So pharmacies buy drugs from wholesalers, and wholesalers buy drugs from manufacturers. And when a person buys a drug at a retail pharmacy, the person in the person's insurance company or part pharmacy benefit manager or PBM pay the pharmacy. A manufacturer negotiates rebates with PBMs to increase sales of the manufacturer's drugs through formulary placement. So that is including the drugs among those covered by the formulary and putting the drugs in a more favorable tier. So what the PBM paid the pharmacy isn't the cost of the drug. The net cost of the drug subtracts the rebates. So for Medicaid, it's a little different. States receive statutory rebates for the drugs paid for by their Medicaid programs, and states can also negotiate additional rebates with manufacturers. We focused on specialty drugs because my co-authors and I knew from other studies that specialty drugs are a big part of gross drug spending. However, we didn't have a good understanding across payers of spending on specialty drugs net of the rebates paid by manufacturers to PBMs and states because the rebates are proprietary information. Prices paid at the pharmacy are easier to obtain and are useful information, but when we think about how much of the economy and real resources are going into the healthcare system, we need to net out those rebates. The amount being spent on specialty drugs and other drugs is not as high as pharmacy prices suggest.
Now, one of the things you found in doing this study was that the use of rebates across Medicaid, Medicare Part D, and private insurance has virtually exploded. For example, rebates roughly quadrupled from $11.5 billion to $44.7 billion over the 8-year period of your study. Can you discuss this trend further?
So we found that the amount of money flowing from manufacturers to PBMs, insurers, and Medicaid programs has increased considerably. We compared 2-year time periods to increase our sample sizes, and we removed general price inflation from our comparisons. We estimated that aggregate rebates for retail specialty drugs obtained by Medicare Part D beneficiaries rose from $2.2 billion per year in 2010 to 2011 to $14.9 billion per year in 2016 to 17. We estimated aggregate rebates for retail specialty drugs obtained by people with private insurance rose from about $5.3 billion per year in 2010 to 2011 to $18.5 billion per year in 2016 to 2017. And we estimated that aggregate rebates for retail specialty drugs obtained by Medicaid beneficiaries rose from $3.5 billion per year in 2010 to 11 to $9 billion per year in 2016 to 2017. These increases in aggregate rebates reflect the fact that the use of specialty drugs has more than doubled for Medicare Part D beneficiaries and those with private insurance. In addition, Medicaid beneficiaries also had large increases in use. We estimated Medicaid rebate rates based on details of the federal law, and that law increases rebates when prices charged by manufacturers rise and prices have risen. So for people with private insurance and Medicare Part D, the increase in aggregate rebates may also reflect the outcomes of negotiations between manufacturers and PBMs.
Are there any significant differences in the way rebates are being applied to public versus private drug payment?
Well, what I can say is that state Medicaid programs receive the manufacturer's rebates directly. For private insurance and Medicare Part D, the PBMs or insurance companies receive the rebates. So that's one difference that I know about.
And what are the downsides to this proliferation of rebate use? Is there not enough clarity on specialty drug spending, a severely constrained free market, or at least a free market for drugs that lacks transparency? Is there an impact from payers?
So one downside is a lack of transparency that makes it difficult to know how much is being spent on retail drugs overall by payer for specific drugs and groups of drugs, and for people with different health conditions and other characteristics. This can make it difficult to determine how to best constrain costs. Some people are concerned about another downside, that it's difficult for employers and insurers to know how much money PBMs are getting in rebates for the drugs obtained by the covered population, and then how much of the money is used to reduce premiums. For plans in the Medicare Part D program, however, a government audit found that PBMs retain less than 1% of rebates and pass along the rest. Another downside is for consumers. When cost sharing is calculated based on gross prices paid to pharmacies, consumers pay more out of pocket for their drugs than they would if their cost sharing were based on net prices. Some insurers have recently started to base cost sharing on prices net of rebates. In any case, our study quantified spending and rebates, but we did not attempt to quantify these downsides.
Are there any advantages to this rebate proliferation that we might be overlooking?
Well, rebates can be used by PBMs and insurance companies to keep premiums for private insurance and Medicare Part D plans low for everyone. And that's sort of an upside.
Can you discuss some of the challenges in calculating net specialty drug spending and how that may have skewed your findings? What's your level of confidence in the numbers you have derived on gross versus net spending?
So our studies based on retail specialty drugs from a nationally representative survey, the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, or MEPS. In that survey, respondents report the drugs they obtained and the pharmacies they visited. Then the interviewers request the respondents' permission to obtain more details from their pharmacies. The pharmacies provide the prices. Then we augmented the survey data with rebates. We estimated a lower bound on Medicaid rebates for each drug using the statutory formula. For other payers, we obtained information about drug rebates from SSR Health and merged that onto the survey. One of the limitations of our study is that our methods likely underestimate the size of the Medicaid rebates because we lack access to proprietary information. We also did not have information about rebates that states may have negotiated with manufacturers that go beyond the statutory rebates. The rebate data for other payers likely overestimated the size of rebates for people with private insurance and Medicare Part D. We did not have separate rebate rates for each of those programs. So differences in estimated aggregate rebates between those payers are solely based on the mixture of drugs obtained by Medicare beneficiaries and the privately insured. And finally, when we ran statistical tests, we were able to account for the sampling variation in the survey, but not for variation associated with simulating the rebates.
Do you have any thoughts on how these rebates and specialty drug growth trends are affecting access to medicine via each of the pathways you explained?
Well, our study didn't measure access to medicines, but since the use of retail specialty drugs doubled over the time period we studied, then perhaps access is good. Or alternatively, specialty drugs cover more therapeutic areas, or health conditions of people who use these drugs are growing, or more people have insurance that covers specialty drugs, or some combination of all these factors. Cost sharing affects access to and affordability of medicines. For poor and low-income people in public programs, cost sharing is limited. For others, cost could be a greater access barrier, when cost sharing is calculated based on gross prices, again, consumers pay more for the drugs than they would if their cost sharing were based on net prices. Some insurers have started to base cost sharing on net prices, but our study did not assess cost sharing provisions and affordability. But those are the things that one could think about.
Now, it seems we're moving in the opposite direction from price transparency, although in the study you note that regulators and payers are taking steps to get a clearer picture of costs and manage the drug flow better. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's right. There are some efforts to increase transparency. For example, starting next year, Medicare Part D plans will be implementing systems that help patients and providers make informed decisions. Specifically, some electronic health record systems will have beneficiary-specific drug coverage and cost information, and this is a real step forward.
Of what value is information like this, such as you have synthesized, to policymakers? What can they do with it to improve access to care?
Well, policymakers face trade-offs between maintaining incentives to develop specialty drugs and paying for growing prescription drug spending. Similarly, private payers face trade-offs between rising premiums for everyone and funding specialty drugs that improve the health of a small but growing number of patients. But policymakers and private insurers cannot make informed decisions if they don't know how much they're spending. Our article on trends in retail specialty drug spending net of manufacturer rebates is a first step in informing decision makers as they strive to meet their competing goals.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to describe some of the research being produced by the Federal Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality.
Well, you're very welcome, Dr. Hill. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.